Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another week on the Health Wealth Podcast. We've got another great episode this week. I've got another guest with me again, and we're going to hear another brilliant health story, just like last week. So I'm joined by Richard Smith, the Keto Pro, and I will let him introduce himself. He'll do a better job than me. So Richard, first of all, welcome to the show.
Ryan, absolute pleasure, my man. Thank you so much. We recorded a fantastic podcast recently, didn't we, regarding the Blue Zones. Yeah, incredible podcast. It's, do you know, it was taking off very well on my channel. And I think the powers that be got their mitts involved and it just stopped. I was getting between 200 to 300 views per hour, which is a lot for my channel. And then it just stopped dead. I don't know if you've experienced the same, but I mean, the topics we discussed in that are, I suppose, highly controversial, but it's a shame.
Yeah.
It's a shame that we can't get that message out there. But anyway, nevertheless, yeah, thanks for the intro. It's a pleasure to be chatting again. Super excited. Yeah, as Ryan said, my name's Richard Smith. I'm a nutritionist. I run the business and the brand Keto Pro. How deep do you want me to go into this, right? Do you want me to start with my full story?
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, give us your whole story because I think it's a brilliant story. So yeah, I'll just let you crack on with it, and I'll ask some questions after.
All right, let's give it to you both, Barrows. Then. So yeah, 10, 11 years ago, I was clinically obese. I was type 2 diabetic. I suffered with severe daily debilitating migraines that would make me blind, chronic fatigue, depression, anxiety, arthritic pains, acne, a myriad of health issues. I could barely walk up the stairs in my mid to late 20s without stopping or being severely out of breath. And my doctor just told me that it was a fact of life. You know, you're just getting older and here's your medication. I was in my mid to late 20s. You know, and I was led to believe that this was a fact of life. I persevered for a little while, but I decided to make some changes. In short, I removed bread. Now, I've tried every other diet and lifestyle that you can think of over the years. You know, I've eaten what we are told is a healthy lifestyle. Yes, I went through spells of consuming lots of foods that we know are detrimental to our health. I'm a food addict, and I still am. I love food. I was a food addict then, and I'm still a food addict now. I've just changed, you know, my addiction, my drug of choice, if you like. But, you know, growing up, I grew up in a very poor family. So we didn't have any processed foods. Everything was home cooked. My mother used to buy this huge sack of potatoes from the van around the corner, you know, for £5. I remember that much. And it would last for months. And she would deep fat fry these in lard. And I thought at the time that this was really unhealthy. You know, the potato itself wasn't so good, but the lard, as it happens, you know, as we know now, was incredibly good for us. And she'd always add some sort of protein to it. So it would always be, you know, sometimes it was processed stuff like sausages, but quite often, you know, it was chicken or another form of protein. Now, I grew up believing that this was unhealthy. My mother couldn't afford to buy, you know, takeaways on the weekend. You know, we never had McDonald's or Burger King, none of these things. Burger King, it wasn't even around, you know, when I was younger, at least local to myself. And neither was McDonald's. In fact, I remember that my mother asked me what I wanted for my 13th birthday. And there was a burger joint on the main road in my town. Called Topoli's, and they did these giant size burgers, normal size burgers, but I was only 13, so it felt like it was a giant burger. And I'd seen somebody eating one, and I'd never tried anything like it before, and that's what I asked for my 13th birthday. My 13th birthday came around, I consumed like half of this burger, and I was full, and I thought this was the nicest thing I'd ever tasted in my life. And in there was the start of my food addiction journey. I grew up. I moved out, I began working, and I was addicted to food. If I left work to go out and work on site somewhere, I would stop in every burger van that you could think of because now I had money and I didn't have any growing up. I was constantly buying fast food. I also began working for an Indian takeaway as a driver. So I was working as a purchasing manager for an electrical engineering company. I was delivering Indian takeaway in the evenings. And a few years into this, I started my own business as an airport transfer company, and I was driving people back and forth the airport. So I'd work from 8 until 4:30. Then I'd work for the Indian takeaway between 6 and midnight, and that was every day. The purchasing manager job was Monday to Friday. And then the airport transfer work was done between midnight and 8 a.m. the next day before I was in work. So my sleep was all over the place. I used to sleep during my breaks. You know, the reason I did this was I was in debt. I needed money, so I had to work lots of jobs. And because I was on the road, I was eating all of these processed foods. I was consuming this Indian takeaway, which I had a free meal every night. I doubled my body weight in no time at all after leaving school. I left school at 7 stone. And despite, you know, the common misconception that lard was unhealthy, I actually left school fairly healthy and super lean. I doubled my body weight to 14 stone. And then I realized I had a problem. So I began eating healthy, what I thought was healthy. I started eating muesli for breakfast, eating rice and tuna for lunch, chicken breast and broccoli, you know, for my evening meal, and the typical sort of healthy type foods. I gained an additional 3 stone. So I went up to 17 stone at my peak. And that may not sound heavy to many people, but I'm 5'9" and I'm small framed. So this is, you know, my body fat percentage was nearly 60%. And I became that obese through eating what I thought was healthy. At this time, I was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. I was suffering with these daily debilitating migraines that would make me blind, which was on 3 different medications for. I started to suffer with anxiety and depression, for which I was on medication for. So I was on a myriad of medication for lots of different health problems. And again, my doctor just told me that it was a fact of life. But I decided that I didn't want that to be the final score, if you like. At the time, my life was spent living in boxes. And this is a story I think you've heard before, but I think it always bears repeating. The anxiety that I suffered with was so extensive that my life was spent living in boxes. I was scared to go out in public. I never felt worthy of the company of others. So I lived in my box in my house, and I'd leave my box to jump into my metal box, to drive my metal box to my place of work, another big box. And then I would work inside a small box inside my big box. And then I would perform this in reverse at the end of the day to go home. My life was spent living in boxes, and I was always scared to leave my box. And again, it's the fear of not feeling worthy, not feeling worthy of the company of others. I would never leave my house, you know, by myself. I wouldn't go shopping alone. I would drive out of my way to go to a shop that I felt comfortable in if I had to go there by myself, even if it meant driving 10 minutes further. Like a shop that I grew up in, you know, I would drive to the neighboring estate to go to their shop rather than go to the shop that was on my estate that I lived on. I would struggle to leave my house if there was anybody in the street. If there was a neighbor in their garden, I would feel uncomfortable going to my car. And if they were there, if I didn't have a choice, like, you know, it's 10 to 8 in the morning and I need to get to work. And it's like, I can't leave because there's somebody outside. This is how severe and debilitating, you know, these things were. I'd put a hoodie up or something and I'd run to my car and pretend that I couldn't see them. And many people thought that I was rude, but it's, again, the anxiety and the depression was so bad that I didn't feel worthy to speak to other people. And again, I was on lots of medication for all of these things. I decided to do a parachute jump, which I lost a bit of weight for. I had to lose weight for this. I lost a bit of weight to do the parachute jump. I can't remember what weight I needed to be, but I know I had to lose. I had to get to a certain weight. And I did the parachute jump, and I paid like 350 quid to have it filmed and photographed and all this sort of stuff. And I remember before we did the jump, I did it with my sister. So it was a tandem jump. So my sister had an instructor and I had an instructor. And my sister is tiny. She's like half my height and she's like half my weight, absolutely tiny. This big guy walks in and they explain then that this is her instructor. And they also explained then about the weight distribution. And that's why, you know, we need a bigger instructor for my little sister. And this tiny little guy walks in for me. And I said to them, you know, why, you know, if it's about weight, why have I got this guy who's like half my size? Like, and they looked at each other and didn't know how to tell me. But I did the jump. I had the pictures, and there I realized why they wouldn't tell me. I was like, I had hamster face. My face was out here. My body was like, I look like a whale. I paid a fortune for this video and these pictures, and nobody has ever seen them because I destroyed them. I was absolutely disgusted with the way that I looked. And I knew that I was overweight. I knew that I was unhealthy. But it was seeing it there in that picture with this tiny little guy in front of me, and, you know, seeing other pictures of my sister with, and I just looked like, you know, like a hippo. And it really knocked it home for me, you know. It's and that's what pushed me forward. So I began restricting bread, and the reason for this was I knew the bread bloated me, and the thinking behind it was if I could alleviate some of that bloat, it would at least give the impression that I wasn't so obese. And it worked. It did work. And along with it came 2 stone of weight loss. I can't remember the exact time, actually. It may have been even 4 weeks. It was either 4 or 8 weeks. It was incredibly quickly. I don't want to quote the wrong number just in case someone looks back and sees it on a different video and I've said a different number, but it happened in an incredibly quick time. And I started to feel a little bit better. And I spoke to a friend of mine, and he said that, you know, you're probably in a ketogenic state. And I was like, don't swear at me, you know. I'd never heard of that term before. And this was like 11 years ago. You know, nobody knew what a ketogenic diet was. You know, and what was known was predominantly based from America. Excuse me. It was based in the States. And when you Googled or searched on YouTube for ketogenic diets, there was lots of misinformation. So it was very, very unknown at that point. So I tested. I bought some test strips, urine test strips, and I showed negative on these test strips because I was still consuming foods that I thought were healthy. I was still consuming lots of fruits and vegetables. I was still consuming other compounds that I didn't even realize had sugar in, for example. You know, later, as you and your listeners know, all carbs break down into sugar. All carbs break down into sugar. Carbs is sugar, you know, and it's nothing more than a market ploy. So I began restricting fructose, fruit, and other carb sources over the course of the next 2 weeks. And I'm not going to lie, it was the worst 2 weeks of my life. I honestly thought I was going to die. And this is sugar addiction, you know, and this was my drug of choice. I was a sugar addict, and sugar is highly addictive. And I need to be careful how I say this because I sometimes get a boost on my YouTube channel. Sugar has been shown to be more addictive than cocaine, and arguably, and I say arguably, just as addictive as heroin. And the reason I say that is a guy who was an heroin addict came on my channel recently and said, I was addicted to heroin. I quit it easily, but I can't quit sugar. Sorry, the other way around. I quit sugar, but I couldn't quit heroin. But then, you know, it's, you've only got to take a step back and look on the high street. Every single person on that high street is addicted to sugar. So the reality is, you know, it probably is more addictive. Either way, it's a highly addictive compound. It's a drug, and this is how it works in the body. And in fact, sugar is so toxic that this is why insulin is elicited. Insulin is elicited by the pancreas to pull that sugar out of the blood in order to keep us alive. If it didn't, we would die. It's a toxin to the body. We need sugar, or we need glucose. That much is true, but the body makes all of the glucose that we need. It makes it through a process called gluconeogenesis, in which we convert protein and lipid into glucose. And again, this is demand-driven. So that the requirement for exogenous carbohydrate or glucose is zero. The body makes all of the sugar that we need. But I restricted, and I genuinely thought that I was going to die one night before I went to bed. I didn't die, thankfully. And I woke up the next day and I felt incredible. And that was the turning point for me. But the reason that I persevered when I felt genuinely that I was so unwell that I was going to die was because I hated myself so much. I hated the way I looked. I was disgusted with my body. You know, I had no self-confidence. I was suffering with this anxiety and this depression. And, you know, for anybody listening that has suffered with depression, it's absolutely debilitating because it takes over your life. And that coupled with anxiety is just a perfect storm for ill health. And it can be an incredibly quick and rapid downward spiral if you let it get hold of you. And it did for many years. You know, I became an alcoholic. Technically, you know, I used to drink every night. What started with a glass of wine turned into two glasses. Two glasses is nearly a bottle. So then I started drinking bottles of wines a night. And then it was two bottles. And then I'd buy three bottles for a tenner from, you know, that shop that I used to drive out of my estate to go to. So it wasn't even nice wine. It was disgusting, you know. But it was either that or I'd drink a liter of whiskey or eight cans of, you know, Stella or something, you know. And I felt that I needed these things and I was addicted to them. I also became addicted to the prescription drug Tramadol because it used to make me feel warm and fuzzy. It used to help with the anxiety and the depression. And it got to the point that I couldn't leave my house without taking them. So I was popping them like pills, you know, sweets in the UK, candy for your listeners in the States. You know, I was literally popping them like sweets and candy before going to work, during work, after. The dose increased, you know, significantly because your body gets used to them. Tramadol is highly addictive. And I had to buy them, you know, on the black market. So I had to buy them illegally. So this isn't a good place to be. And it's an embarrassing story. But, you know, this was the beginning for me. And after I learned a little bit more about nutrition, and that didn't come easy because everything that we're taught is incorrect. Almost everything that we're told is the opposite to what real health should look like. And I fell into every pitfall you can imagine. I made every mistake that you can think of. And I think this is what has taught me all of the lessons that I needed to learn. And because of this, you know, I felt like I'd found a secret. I felt like I'd found a secret that nobody else was talking about. And again, this was before, you know, Sean Baker was out there and Anthony Chaffee and all of these cool other guys who were out there, you know, talking about keto and carnivore. I felt like I found this secret and I wanted to tell the world about my secret. Over the course of the next 12 months, I'd lost 107 pounds. I reversed my diabetes. I was now depression and anxiety free, at least as free as you can be. I think these are things that you can, I don't know if you can ever get rid of them. I haven't got rid of them completely. But to put this into perspective, I'm on the show with you. I never would have done this. You couldn't have got me on this for money. You know, I wouldn't have done a live or a public speaking event genuinely for £1 million. That's how severe my anxiety and depression was. And now I do it for free. I do these public speaking events and podcasting. And I speak to thousands of people, you know, during some of the speaking events. But yeah, I'd lost 107 pounds, reversed my diabetes, become as close to depression and anxiety free as possible. My migraines went away. I still suffer with migraines, but instead of suffering with these daily debilitating migraines that make me blind, for which I was on three medications for, I'm on zero medication, and now I'll get one or two migraines a year. And when I do, they're usually caused through lack of sleep, stress, you know, which come hand in hand with being self-employed, unfortunately. Yeah. But they're much, much more manageable now. Again, you know, the anxiety and depression went away. All of these arthritic pains went away. And in order to prove to, you know, the people that I was working with how powerful this was, I began training again. I began lifting weights. And I found that I was building, because I was incredibly skinny at this point. I was super lean, super shredded, because I'd lost all this fat. I'd lose skin, but I was lean, you know. Shredded what I could be. I had a layer around the gut. I had stretch marks. So I began training. And over time, I managed to build, you know, a decent amount of muscle. The stretch marks went away. My skin tightened. And all of these things are things that people say are almost impossible. You know, you can't build muscle without carbs. You can't get rid of stretch marks. You know, loose skin needs to be cut off and all this sort of stuff. My skin tightened. Super long story short, I decided to compete in an amateur bodybuilding competition in men's physique. And this is a massive thing for me because I suffer so severely with this anxiety and depression. And I struggled to walk on stage, but very long story short, I managed to get on there and I came second in that competition. I decided to go back the following year. I came second and third. And every time I went back, the competition became tougher and tougher. Year three, I did so well that I was awarded pro status. So I became a professional bodybuilder as in men's physique in my age. And then I continued to compete as a pro, for which I was always placed. I was never unplaced. And eventually, I went on to become British champion and European champion. And this was taken a couple of weeks after I won the European championship. So I went from being unable to walk up the stairs in my mid to late 20s to in my mid 30s, becoming number one in Europe in a professional sport. And this was all diet related. All of these health things, all these health problems that were debilitating went away. And when you tell that to people, they think that you are absolutely bat beep mental. I don't know if we can swear on your show.
Yeah, you can.
There we are. People thought I was batshit crazy.
Yeah.
But look, it's plain and simple, and I'll break it down. Every cell in the body is made of protein. Every cell in the body is made of fat. So we need protein and fat. And all my life, I've been avoiding the healthy type of fat, saturated fats, fats from animal proteins. You know, I went through spells where I was eating lots of vegetables when I thought that I was being incredibly healthy. Vegetables are not the best source of nutrients. I'm not saying you can't get nutrients from them, but animal proteins are way more abundant in amino acids, vitamins and minerals. And we can go into, we can get it really deep into this if you want to. Neurotransmitters. So the reason I was depressed and felt anxious, 95% of the neurotransmitters are made in our gut. And they've done so through something called the shikimate pathway. Grains, cereal, you know, bread, pasta, rice, they're treated with a toxic compound called glyphosate. Glyphosate blocks the shikimate pathway. It blocks our body's ability to go on to create our aromatic amino acids and our neurotransmitters. 95% of our neurotransmitters are made in the gut. So very little of my neurotransmitters were being produced efficiently. Now, neurotransmitters are created from three amino acids, tryptophan, tyrosine, and phenylalanine. But in order to make the cake, but we'll say fry the steak. In order to fry the steak, we need other ingredients, you know? And those ingredients are cofactors, things like zinc, iron, magnesium, vitamin B3, vitamin B6, vitamin B12, iron, all of which can be blocked by as much as 100% through glyphosate and through compounds found in those plants themselves. Things called phytoalexins, plant toxins, lectins and phytic acids in particular can block the absorption of these nutrients by as much as 100%. Now that I was devoid of them, my body was able to make my neurotransmitters, dopamine, epinephrine, norepinephrine, serotonin, melatonin, so on and so forth. Now I felt alive for the first time in my life. You know, I was in my mid-30s and this was the first time that I actually felt like myself. It's almost as if the fog had been lifted and I could see clearly. And genuinely, my eyesight had improved. Every part of my health and well-being, aches and pains, my acne went away. I used to suffer with severe acne all over my body, these big boils on my face. And I was issued with medication, you know, this compound, this topical compound that I put onto these boils. And, you know, it never really worked, but they were always on my back. I used to wear makeup. So I used to put my missus's makeup on in order to cover these boils and things, you know, as embarrassing as that is. I don't need to do it. I don't suffer with these spots anymore. I don't suffer with these boils. I don't suffer with the dry skin. I used to suffer with severe dry skin on my hands. And if I clenched my hands too tight, my skin would crack and bleed. My sister suffers with eczema. So I'm guessing it was maybe something related to this. I used to suffer with breathing problems. You know, I don't know if it was asthma. I was never diagnosed, but asthma does run in my family. All of these things went away. Following that, I've come away from bodybuilding and now I've gone into endurance training. So now I do lots of running and cycling. And now I feel like I'm thriving in that arena. You know, for anybody listening who's into running and cycling, you know, they can probably relate to these figures. But I've been doing this for just over a year. I've achieved a 70-minute 5K run, 37-minute 10K. And there are people out there who can run considerably quicker than this. I'm not saying it's impressive, but I think what is impressive, when you look at a pool of people, of runners from running clubs, they've taken 10 years to get to the stage that I've managed to get to in a year and a half. And some people never run these times. They've never been able to run these times in their lifetime. On the bike, my FTP, which is your functional threshold power, is 280 watts, which gives me a 4 watt per kilogram, which is, that's pretty tasty. I've competed in a couple of duathlons and done really well in British qualifying duathlons with 400 of the world's best duathlon athletes, and I came 93rd, and these are people who've been doing this for an awful long time. So not only have I come away from being clinically obese and diabetic and suffering with all of these other things, this lifestyle, and this lifestyle is eating, that word keto, it doesn't mean anything. Carnivore doesn't mean anything. This is about eating an evolutionary appropriate diet, foods that are real foods, not Franken foods, not fake foods, not processed foods. Foods that contain toxic compounds, vegetable oils, other packaged foods in the supermarket, which are full of all sorts of nasty fillers and other compounds. Eating real food, this is what has allowed me to achieve these things. And I genuinely believe that if we were to do almost the opposite to what we are told to do to be healthy, then we would be way healthier. You've only got to look at pictures of people and videos from the 1950s and 60s. You'd be hard pressed to find people there who were overweight. And they were eating bacon and eggs cooked in butter every day, And that's what my life consists of now. I'm now carnivore. So I gravitated, initially low carb. Then I became what I class as dirty keto. Then I became standard keto, then a clean keto. And all of these things, they were different levers that I was pulling, different levels, if you like, as I learned more, as I became more educated. Again, I fell into every pitfall you can imagine. And that's what led me into the research. This has caused this to happen, yet the widestream media will say that these things are good for you. Well, why has this happened to me? And then you start speaking to people and you realize all of these other people are in the same boat as you. So it isn't just me. I'm not a minority. And then you start to look into the research, the proper clinical trials, research papers, and you realize that this information over this side, where are we there, camera, is the opposite to what is actually working as far as health and well-being. And when you unlearn everything that we've been taught and you start to listen to health professionals such as yourself, it's life-changing. I'm still single-figure body fat now. I do not track, any macros or calories. I don't count calories. I can tell you how much I eat on an average because I've done so to prove to other people. An average for me is anywhere between 4,000 to 6,000 calorie equivalent per day, and I'm single-figure body fat. Now, when I was on a high-carbohydrate diet, 2,700 calories would cause me to gain weight in fat every week. I was gaining. If I dieted, I couldn't stick it for long. I'd stuff my face. I'm still a food addict, but I've changed my drug of choice. My drug of choice now is protein and fat, and feeling good. Blood in my body with ketones. And this is what has allowed me to change my life, change my perception of life. It's allowed me to see the world in a different light. It's allowed me to help thousands of other people. I get to speak with incredible people such as yourself, and I've made a business out of it. And this business, it began as coaching. And now I stock and manufacture products that allow people to help and maintain their lifestyle. You don't need products, but I offer them, should people be struggling with certain things. But this for me is the optimal way to live. And I'm carnivore. So all I eat now is meat, eggs, fish and cheese. I occasionally indulge in a Greek yogurt. And I still drink coffee. I don't drink as much as I should. There are reasons to remove coffee, but coffee works really well for me. And I believe that the net gain is positive for the amount that I use. But that is probably the worst thing that I consume, within a set period. But that's it. I can't remember the last time I've eaten any veg. you know, fruit years ago. And I'm thriving. I'm 40 years of age, and I'm the healthiest and fittest that I've ever been. I don't think I look 40. I feel a lot younger. I still feel like I'm in my teens. You know, lining up on these races, these running races and cycling races that I do now, I'm there with all the kids thinking, you know, I'm the same age as them. You know, I feel like, and quite often I feel younger than they look. And this is what the lifestyle has done to me. It's absolutely life-changing, and it doesn't cost a penny. You know, you don't need supplements. You can do this purely through the food that you eat. But understanding what these foods do in the body is a massive learning curve. But it's a learning curve that we can break down into simple terms. And when you understand those simple terms, it becomes such an easy lifestyle to live and to maintain. So there we are. That's
brilliant. That's amazing. It's an amazing story. And I think, you know, your story just perfectly highlights how what we're eating is what's causing all of these health issues, because you had so many different issues and, you know, and mental health issues as well as physical, and you reversed them all just through your diet. And like you said, you didn't just reverse them. You went to the other end of the scale and, you know, won bodybuilding championships, which, you know, is amazing. That just highlights that it's the food, you know, that, you know, there's other toxins within our environment that are playing a part as well. But the main thing is the food. Like you said, 50 years ago, you wouldn't have seen people with all these conditions, and it's what we're eating. It's obvious when you know, but like you said, the hardest thing is we've got to unlearn everything, haven't we, and start over. And one of the things actually I was talking about with a client yesterday was about how, because I imagine you went through this, because you said about the different stages, is that you clean up your diet and you feel amazing. You think, well, this is brilliant. But a lot of people just stop there. But the thing is, if you take another step, how do you know that you're not going to feel even better? Which I imagine, is that what you went through, going like kind of making your way to zero carb?
Yeah, 100%. So when I began low carb, as I said, you know, that saw lots of benefits for me. Then I learned about keto and I gravitated into that, but it was more of a dirty keto and then became a clean keto. But when I was clean keto, I was more vegetarian than anything else. I believed that vegetables were the magic elixir. And I genuinely believed that. I'd wake up every morning, I'd make a kale and spinach smoothie with turmeric and black pepper. But I felt amazing. Whenever I consume my food, it would be a plate full of broccoli with a little bit of chicken, you know, or, you know, a little bit of steak, or, you know, I've always eaten meats. But this time in my life was the time that I consumed the least amount of meat ever. And I felt the best I'd ever felt. Now, if in that moment you said to me that eating that amount of vegetables is bad for you, you know, those foods contain certain compounds, I wouldn't have believed it, because I felt so good. But the reason I felt good was in spite of, and not because of, I'd cut out processed foods. I was no longer eating, you know, Chinese takeaway, Indian takeaway, excuse me, Burger King, McDonald's, you know, whatever, KFC, Domino's. I'd removed those. I'd became more active. My body was still producing ketones. Now, ketones, coming back to what you just said about environmental toxins, the body has the ability to detox naturally. And when we produce higher levels of ketones, this naturally increases glutathione, which is the body's master antioxidant. So we don't need all of these other compounds to detox. You know, people on these juice cleanses and these veg cleanses, you don't need them. You know, they may confer a benefit in the short term. I don't know how deep you want me to go in this. I mean, we can really rip this apart if you wanted to. I don't know what sort of path your viewers are on, but it's, we don't need to do these things when the body is creating ketones. But look, I was consuming lots of vegetables and I was way healthier than I'd ever been for a long time. And then busy in work led me down this path of being, and I quite often say laziness, but I didn't have time to boil my veg or cook my veg, because it takes a bit of time to do veg. So I just began pan frying steak, you know, because it's quick. Steak is the original fast food. I like mine rare, so I can cook mine in like 2 minutes. I can cook my steak in less time than it takes to boil an egg. So that's why I started doing that. Steak in the pan. I'd walk back to my desk, and this was in the church that I was renting at the time that I was working from. So I was renting an old church as an office space and a business. I walk back in the kitchen, turn the steak back over, back to my desk, another minute or two, back, done. Original fast food. I did this for 6 months, and I began to question, you know, my diet then, because I was thinking, well, my God, I haven't eaten any kale or spinach. I know I haven't had any turmeric and all these other compounds for over 6 months. I feel incredible. I feel even better than I did then. And it's like, hang on a minute now, we need vegetables for vitamins and minerals. So then I started investigating vitamins and minerals. Now, if you search for something on Google, if you want to find something, you'll find whatever it is you want to look for by adjusting the words that you search for. And I genuinely believe that some search engines are geared up in order to provide in specific results that they want you to see, whether you believe that or not. So I started to look for the opposite. I started to disprove what I was looking for through various different search engines. And what it led me to find, and this is fact, I'm not making this up, animal proteins contain every single vitamin and mineral that we need, not just to survive, but thrive, every single one of them. And then it was like, well, what's actually in vegetables then? And then I started to compare the quantity stated compared to what is actually in animal proteins. And then I discovered that most of the vitamins that are found in plants are not actually in human form, you know? And I'll give one example, and we can go into this if you want to, but I don't want to bore, you know, the listeners too much, but vitamin A doesn't exist in plants. Vitamin A, the first one on the list, vitamin A, retinol, does not exist in plants. Plants contain beta carotene. Beta carotene is not retinol. It's not true vitamin A. It's a precursor that needs to be acted upon by an enzyme called BCMO in order to convert it into the active form of retinol. And in order to do so, it's depleted by 21 times, making the amount converted close to zero. Plants do not contain vitamin A. Your mother was wrong when she told you that eating your carrots would help you see in the dark. There's no retinol in carrots or any plant for that matter. And that's just one example. And it's the same when you go through, and we can go through them if you like. You know, I'll let you throw the questions when I finish this now, but it led me to believe and find out and discover that that piece of beef, you know, and all of these other animal proteins contained everything and in way higher quantities and far more bioavailable, even vitamin C. So it's a common misconception that vitamin C does not exist in animal proteins. Vitamin C exists in animal proteins. It is a lot lower, sort of. And there is a caveat to this. It is a lot lower per gram. But for example, a 12-ounce steak will contain around 12 grams of vitamin C, 12 milligrams of vitamin C. Now, what you could argue there is that kale contains like 93 milligrams per 100 grams. So far higher, okay? And that's per 100 grams. But the thing with vitamin C from kale is the kale is also high in a compound called flavonoids. Flavonoids block the absorption of vitamin C. They block the absorption of vitamin C, which then blocks the absorption of net protein utilization within the body. Flavonoids also compete for iodine at the thyroid, which means that they can cause thyroid problems. But that vitamin C, very close, or at least a lot less of that 93 milligrams is actually absorbed. And once that kale is cooked, that 93 becomes 20. So it, just by cooking, that 93 becomes 20, and then you've got the effect of the flavonoids on top. So very way, way less of that 93 is actually absorbed, if any at all, in some cases. But beef contains that 12-ounce steak is round about 12 milligrams of vitamin C. Now, the interesting thing with vitamin C is that it competes for absorption through the GLUT4 transporter, which means that when you reduce carbohydrates, our requirement for vitamin C becomes less. The more carbs you eat, the more vitamin C you need because they're competing. The less carbs you consume, the less our requirement for vitamin C. I've barely eaten a vegetable in the last 6 years. I've been animal-based, if you like, or carnivore for 5 or 6 years, ketogenic for 10, 11 years. I'm still waiting to suffer with scurvy, you know? And we know that with animal proteins cure scurvy, because they showed this during the Napoleonic War, where they fed dead horse meat to the soldiers who were suffering with scurvy. There was enough vitamin C in horse meat to cure scurvy, and comfortably as well. We don't just get the bare minimum. What we get from the animal proteins is more than we need. And there are other sources of vitamin C within animal proteins as well. Beef liver, for example, contains TUMPS, and I think it's around 24 milligrams by memory per 100 grams. I may be wrong, but it's considerably higher. So again, if you're consuming organ meats, you're going to be consuming way higher levels of vitamin C. And it's the same across the board. So, I mean, there's just two examples there in regards to why animal proteins contain everything. Another argument would be fiber. And again, I'm going to bounce this back to you, and you can throw some questions back at me, but it was this continuation down the rabbit hole that led me to believe that, you know, we don't need plants in our diet. If you're consuming plants, that's fine. You know, again, you can thrive eating plants. You can thrive, you know, any stage along this journey, but you hit the nail right on the head. It doesn't mean that you can't be healthier. There's always more levers to pull. You know, you're just pulling the first lever. You know, there's levers all the way down this journey that you can pull to improve your health and well-being. It's just about education. How far down that rabbit hole, you know, you want to go is entirely up to you. But what I try to do is explain to people, you know, the basics. Animal proteins are all we need. Protein and fat. Every cell in our body is made of protein. Every cell in the body is made of fat. That's all we need to consume. We consume animal proteins. They're broken down into amino acids. Those amino acids are reconstituted into human proteins, human DNA. We heal, repair, and build the body. Every cell is made of protein. Every cell is made of fat. There's not one cell that's made of sugar or glucose. We do use sugar in the form of glycoproteins and so on and so forth to bind to receptor sites to send signals to cells. But again, the glucose that we need to do this is made inside the body, which we make from the proteins and the fats that we consume. That's all we need to consume. When you are building your plate, prioritize protein. Protein in nature comes with fat. An egg is protein and fat. A piece of beef is protein and fat. Chicken breast with the skin on is protein and fat. But what do we do in our wisdom? Because we're told the fat is bad for us. We take that chicken breast, and we take the skin off, we remove the fat. Nature has just provided us with this perfectly packaged present, and we think we know best. And this is what has led to this cascade of events of ill health and you know, depression, anxiety, and so on and so forth. Always build your meals around animal proteins. If you want veg, that's fine, but predominate the animal proteins and add the least toxic forms of veg. And again, we can get into that if you like, but you know, you can live a healthy vegan lifestyle. You can be healthier as a vegan compared to living a standard lifestyle, because as a vegan, you've removed all of the processed foods. You know, you're looking for, you're eating vegetables, you're eating real food, at least you're not eating fake foods. You tend to be more active. You've just quit smoking. You stopped drinking. I had a client with me today. Her son became vegan and stopped smoking and drinking, you know, because you become more health conscious. You start walking more. You're in the direct sunlight. You know, your circadian rhythm improves. You start meeting new people. You become part of, you know, this cult, the vegan cult. You know, we're part of a cult, allegedly. You know, I'm a cult leader, apparently. You become part of this group, and it becomes, you know, a support network. You're with like-minded people who bounce off, and you become grounded, and you've got this good support network around you, and you become healthier. But it doesn't mean that being a vegan is optimal. Being vegetarian and consuming eggs and cheese is going to be more healthy. That's going to confer more of a benefit, because now you're consuming more of your vitamin B12. Now you're consuming iron, because we can't get iron from plants. We can't, you know, Popeye was wrong. Spinach contains iron, but it's unattainable. It contains non-heme iron. We need heme iron. And plants don't contain cobalamin, vitamin B12. No plant contains B12. Now, the reason that a vegan would confer a benefit initially is because the liver stores B12. And it can store it for something like 4 to 6 years. So we use these reserves. So for that period of time, you've just become plant-based and you're thriving. You've removed all these other toxins. You're doing all of these other positive things. You feel amazing. Then when this time comes where you start to feel really, you know, unwell because of low iron and low B12, you don't believe that it's because of the plants that you're eating, you know, because they've done you so proud over the last few years. And then, you know, you may start supplementing because you get tested and you find, you know, my iron's low, my B12 is low. So you start supplementing with B12 and iron. And eventually most carnivores that I know were once vegan. They realize that you need these compounds. And then, you know, the majority of the carnivores I know were once vegan, and that's true. And it's incredible when you think about it. It's almost as if we go through this full circle of trying to be healthy. And a vegan and a carnivore, you're the same person. We both have the same goal. There's three reasons that a person would become a vegan. And this isn't a vegan bash. You think, I work with vegans, and I'll work with anyone who wants to improve their health and well-being. I just think education is important. So you become a vegan for health and well-being. You become a vegan for animal cruelty, and you become a vegan for the environment. Eating meat is the best way to be fit and healthy. Eating meat causes less, you know, if you eat solely meat, causes less deaths than a vegan lifestyle. And there's probably people screaming at the screen now. I've done a podcast on this. Go and check it out. You know, feel free to rip it apart. That's what it's there for. But it is, everything I have referenced is spot on. And I have even weighted this heavily towards the vegan argument because I didn't want to, I could have pulled other reports and figures, which vastly overestimated the figures that I've gone in, but I've gone for the lowest figures, you know, for my argument, basically, in order not to be ripped apart by other studies. And I underestimated. But a vegan lifestyle does cause animal death. You know, if you think it doesn't, then you are incredibly, head in the sand. You know, your head is deeply, deeply in the sand. You are incredibly misled if you think that being a vegan doesn't cause animal harm. And it also causes damage to the environment. Regenerative farming techniques, they actually sequester carbon, which means that we improve, you know, the greenhouse gases. And that's even if you believe that. I mean, that's a talk for another day. We could do an entire other episode on greenhouse gases and the evolution of global warming. We're actually at one of the lowest points in Earth's history in regards to gases in the atmosphere and so on and so forth. But that's a talk for another day. But from that argument in regards to methane only makes up 10% of the greenhouse gases. And, you know, cow farming, ruminant animal farming only contributes 2% of that methane. So, I mean, it's incredibly small. So it's not, so that's 2% of that 10%, you know, so it isn't 2% of the overall. 10% is methane, and only 2% of the whole of methane comes from ruminant animals, or at least, cows. And it may be all ruminant animals. I can't remember, but it is incredibly low. I mean, I know it's 2% at least from cows in particular. But that's an incredible figure, you know, when we look at that. And as these studies show that we've referenced for the last few months, is that this carbon is sequestered. It's part of something called the carbon cycle. The carbon's released into the atmosphere. It, you know, it creates rain, it goes back into the soil, it's absorbed by the plants and the microbes, and then the cow eats those, and then it goes back out into the environment through burping and through the poop, which feeds the microbes in the ground, which allows more grass to grow, and so on and so forth. There's no new carbon created. It's the same carbon chain. No new carbon is created. New carbon is created when we burn fossil fuels. New carbon is put into the environment. And again, that's probably a talk for another day, but that's what's led me down to becoming, you know, carnivore or animal-based. And I've been this way, as I say, for 5 or 10 years. And I feel as if I'm thriving. And I'm always looking for other levers to pull. People think that because of what we do, that we are anti-carb. I'm not anti-carb. I'm not anti-anything. You know, if I can confer more of a benefit from adding in another compound, I will do it. I'm still a food addict. Deep down, I'm still a sugar addict. Now, if I could live a lifestyle in which I could eat loads of animal proteins and put carb in, why wouldn't I do it? And I've tried experimenting with carb cycling, you know, carb refeeds, back feeding, front loading, You know, any term that you could throw into car briefing, and I've done it, I've tried it, and I've tried it extensively because I wanted it to work. I want to eat these compounds because they're addictive. But for me, they always make me feel unwell. They always lead me down this path of feeling fatigued and nauseous. They always feel, they always lead to this gastro distress and me not feeling quite myself. And I end up gravitating back towards just eating meat. And that's the way that I've been, you know, in recent years. And I feel as if I'm thriving. And there we are, back to you.
Yeah, no, I think, like you said, one of the hardest parts of getting people to understand, especially at the start, and is the whole vegetable thing, because it's, we're so brainwashed that vegetables and fruit, they're the healthiest thing you can eat. They're the best. And to try and get them to understand that not only do they contain some things we don't want in our bodies, but also the good things, they don't really contain that much, and not that much that's possible for us to get. Like you said, bioavailability is the big thing. Like, okay, you can have a little thing on the screen that says, oh, 100 grams of kale has this, 100 grams of steak has that. First off, 100 grams of kale and 100 grams of steak are not the same thing. No one's eating 100 grams of kale in a sitting. You know, steak's very easy. And then there's the bioavailability, plus the, you know, the phytonutrients and whatever they come with that block the absorption. And I think that's a really, that I find that's maybe the hardest sell. I mean, all of it is kind of a hard sell, because then you've got to convince people that meat's good and we're told that's bad. But I think that people really struggle to understand that fruit and vegetables are definitely not all they're cracked up to be. And like you said, you know, I wasn't such a big fan of vegetables, but I love fruit, and, you know, everyone loves carbs. They're nice. But, you know, the only reason we don't have them is because we feel so much better without them. And it's just, I think, once you can get people to try it, it becomes a lot easier. But it's just beforehand, it does, I mean, it does sound crazy, doesn't it, at first?
It does. It sounds absolutely mental. So look, I'm going through this phase currently in which I'm trying to get my little girl to eat healthy. Now, if I had my way, she'd be carnivore. Her mum understands, but she also feels that she's being mean to her by not letting her have these treats. But you and I have seen the other side of the coin. We've worked with incredibly sick people. I've been incredibly unwell. I know what these compounds do. You know, I speak to people. I had a lady with me today who was on this oxygen machine that she had to carry around with her, you know. You know, this is what eating the wrong foods do to you. I see it every day. I don't want to give my little girl these compounds. Now, that said, I also understand that there's a lot of peer pressure. When she's in school, that's out of my control. When she's over her nan's, that's out of my control. When she goes to a friend's house, that's out of my control. I don't want her to feel that she can't eat these foods ever. I just want her to understand what real food is, so she can make those decisions, which I think she does. You know, I've worked hard on getting her to understand what real food is. But when she's with me, I want her to eat real food. So what I've tried to do, and this has been, and I need to be careful what I say with this now, just in case. In fact, she never listens to podcasts that I do anyway, so it doesn't matter. But it's been the source of lots of arguments.
Yeah.
I've gone through the cupboards and the fridge and the freezer and literally just chucked out hundreds of pounds worth of shopping because it's crap. I don't want these things in my cupboards. I don't want them in my kitchen. I don't want them in my fridge. I don't want them in my freezer. And you know, her attitude is, well, I'll just go and buy them again. Well, go and buy them again, and I'm going to throw them out again. So what I've tried to do and what I've implemented recently, I've taken my little girl shopping. Now, I buy all my food from the butcher. So that's where all my food comes from, because I'm carnivore. I go to the butcher, I hand him 60 quid, and he gives me bags full of stuff, like, you know, whatever he's got there. And it's always beef and lamb and other bits, you know, some organ meats maybe, so on and so forth. But that's my shopping. Other than toiletries, now, I don't use toothpaste. I don't use mouthwash. I don't use aftershave. Obviously, I need toilet paper and those sorts of things. I don't use soap. You know, I don't smell. I don't think. Anyway, nobody's told me I have. And that's the other thing with living the lifestyle. All these things seem to clear up, don't they? Anyway, that's probably another episode. But that's my weekly shop. So when people say meat's expensive, you know, it's not that expensive when you buy in bulk and when you know what to buy. But what I've done recently, I've taken my little girl shopping to the supermarket. I've taken her to Lidl because I believe Lidl offer some of the best sauces. There are others out there who I believe are not so good at supplying quality foods. Can I say who they are? Or
go for it. I'm sure it'll be fine.
So look, the ones that I avoid are Tesco. And it's through personal experience. I've eaten foods there that don't taste like foods. I've eaten meats that don't taste like meats. I've cooked the chicken breast and they've whittled away to next to nothing. I've bought cheese from there, which actually had other ingredients on there. Cheese is cheese. There should be one ingredient to cheese. It should be milk, and milk is a topic for another day again. But I mean, cheese shouldn't have 7 or 8 different ingredients in there. You pick up these other meats that contain seed oils. And anyway, Lidl do a wild caught salmon. The foods that they do supply, they do taste real to me. They say that they're real, and I believe that they are, at least, and I like to think that I'm a bit of a connoisseur when it comes to eating meats. But that said, I support my local farmer. All my meat comes local from my butcher. They've got their own farm. But for this exercise, I took my little girl shopping and I told her that she could buy whatever she wanted, providing it was real, i.e. not in a packet, a shiny packet. If it was a one ingredient product, she could have it. So it came to the fruits and she picked up grapes. And I said, oh, apart from the grapes. I basically said, look, go for berries instead. So she picked up some blueberries and some strawberries. And then went on, she picked up some cucumber and she picked up a couple of different other vegetables. And then we went on to the meats and she picked these Wagyu burgers and she picked up some chicken. She picked up salmon and king prawns and cheese, real cheese. And then it was other veg. And I did let her have white rice. And the reason for this is white rice is lectin free. And lectins are found in all vegetables, but they're particularly high in grains in the form of wheat germ agglutinin and phytohemagglutinin in other vegetables, higher in things like peppers and tomatoes and various other, which are deemed to be, keto friendly. But again, that's different. That's another level. You're talking level 4 there, out of 5 levels. So I let her pick up anything that was real. And when I go home now, she helps me cook it. And then we sit down and she's loving it. So we're making all of these different stuff. There are foods in there that, I'd rather not consume, but at least she's eating real food. Now she understands that, she can have a McDonald's now and again. I don't like it. But what I don't want to do is tell her that you can't have, because the second you can't have something, you want it even more. So, if you're going to have these things, then you must be eating this for the majority of your food. When you're home with me, then these are the foods that we eat and you're going to enjoy them. And she's loving it. And that's what I've tried to do there. And again, it comes back to what you said about these incremental changes. Real food is where it starts, isn't it? Anything with more than one ingredient isn't food. Things in shiny packets are not foods. They contain toxic chemicals like linoleic acid and many other fillers and nasty compounds. At the very basics, start with real food and then, you can gravitate deeper into, and grains are not real food, by the way. Yeah. Grains are not real food. Grains are, they've been genetically modified and hybridized. They are not the ancient grains that we would have once consumed. They've been hybridized to give a higher yield, to make more money. And they're incredibly high in this compound lectins that we've just mentioned, which cause intestinal permeability, by the way. These lectins will bind to the enterocytes line in the gut. They cause the release of a molecule called zonulin. And when zonulin is released, it causes a gap to appear in the tight junction between the epithelial cells. And this allows undigested protein molecules to travel into the bloodstream where they shouldn't be. So the body creates antibodies to fight them. And then through a process called molecular mimicry, the body starts attacking other proteins in the body that look the same. This is autoimmune disease. If you suffer with an autoimmune issue, it stems in most cases from intestinal permeability. And in most of those cases, it comes from things like grains, bread, pasta, rice, so on and so forth. This is why this is one of the compounds that you need to remove. And what I quite often say to people is, we've mentioned carbs and sugars a number of times in this. That isn't even the biggest lever to pull. The biggest lever is the vegetable oils, the seed oils. If you take those out, you're going to confer a benefit because these oils are toxic. They contain linoleic acid, which damages the liver and leads to insulin resistance. It causes oxidation to your LDL particles and makes your LDL into bad cholesterol. LDL, it's in a natural state, is not bad for you. This is probably a talk for another day again. But it causes oxidation. I think we've got a ton of other podcasts. but it damages our LDL. It causes our LDL to become what's called pattern B, which is actually what leads to cardiovascular disease. And if you do not believe me, Google cytosterolemia. Cytosterolemia is a genetic, is in an inherited condition in which the body or the person who suffers with this is unable to remove that phytosterol, which is what these compounds are, and it accumulates in the body and it leads to premature heart disease. So on one hand, they're telling us these compounds prevent heart disease, but then when your body can't remove it, it's causing heart disease. So, and this is on, you can find this on Google or any search engine, cytosterolemia. And that's how we know these compounds are bad for us. Saturated fats are very good for us. Natural fats are very good for us. Remove the seed oils. That's rule number one. Rule number two is remove the grains. If that's all you ever do, those two rules are going to see you being way fitter and healthier. And if after your listeners have done those things and they've conferred massive benefits, then come back and we can go on to 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. Again, levers to pull. And there's lots of levers. But those, to me, are going to give the biggest bang for your buck. Take away the seed oils and drop the grains, and you're going to confer a massive benefit. And that comes before you've even started restricting carb.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I agree in that it's best, you know, to get people doing it in those increments, because, you know, rather like you did, as you remove something and you felt better, then you began to delve deeper into the science behind it and the reasons behind it. And bit by bit, if you try and hit someone with everything we know right now when they haven't begun to even think about anything, it's a lot to take in. So that increment, because like we always say, I mean, you know, you on lots of your podcasts, you've torn studies apart and talked about research. I've done the same on mine. Like, the majority of research out there and studies are absolute garbage. They're not worth the paper they're written on. But what is worth it and what cannot be, you know, disproven or discounted is your personal story, your experience, your N=1. If you remove something and you feel better, that's all you need to know. It doesn't matter what a study says. A study apparently tells us that meat causes diabetes, but we're seeing people reverse their diabetes with meat-only diets. So,
yeah,
you know, what matters? So if we can get people like you did making those steps a step at a time, like you said, just start with seed oils, grains, and then get people just to go deeper. I think that's the best way to do that. I mean, that's kind of what I did too. I was kind of just the gradual went into it, and just the more I removed, the better I felt, and the more I began to understand. So yeah, I think that's great advice for anyone who's thinking of trying to improve their health or get into this way of eating.
Yeah, 100%. And it's interesting you mentioned that about red meat, because a vegan accused me of harming people recently. You can't tell people to eat red meat. Eating red meat causes diabetes. And I said, well, what makes you think red meat causes diabetes? And you referenced this study. And I said, well, did you know that I used to suffer with type 2 and now, you know, I've reversed it by eating red meat? Oh, well, there's always one. I said, well, yeah, I'm one. But that already goes against the study that you've just referenced. But I've worked with hundreds and hundreds of people who suffer with diabetes who have all, when they've stuck to the advice, have either massively improved or completely reversed their diabetes. And it's like, oh, well, that's just a one-off. How can these 500 clients be a one-off?
Yeah.
You know? And as you say, that N=1, it's done it for me. It's done it for them as individuals. It doesn't matter what this paid study says that's paid for by Coca-Cola or Kellogg's. You know, this does go on. People think that we lie when we say things like this. This happens. The Eat Well plate. If you knew who was behind the Eat Well plate, you would be shocked. And we, you know, I have done, there's a great podcast that I do with Zoe Harcombe, which really goes into this. You'd be shocked. You know, our dietary guidelines are built and funded by the companies that want to sell you this crap. Yeah. And that's a conflict of interest. You know, we need to be doing the opposite. Red meat heals the body. Red meat does not cause cancer. And again, that's a talk probably for another day, and we can go in and reference all these studies. But all I eat is predominantly red meat. I eat beef and lamb predominantly. chicken and bacon. And there are reasons to lower certain amounts of these, but you know, this again is level five stuff. But I do eat chicken and bacon, but not as much as grass-fed lamb and beef. And again, I do indulge. I love cheese. Cheese works really well for me. And I indulge in a Greek yogurt occasionally, you know, and it's, if that's the only thing that I've got to worry about, then I don't really have an awful lot to worry about, you know, and I regard myself as being an incredibly strict carnivore. I probably say I'm probably one of the strictest on the planet when it comes to not deviating and not giving in, even when it comes to eating out, you know, I'm incredibly strict. I'll walk out of a restaurant if they can't, you know, service my needs. Or I'll just sit there and won't eat. But yeah, I completely agree. These incremental changes, that's key.
Yeah.
That's how I've done, you know, that's how I've become the person that I am now. That's what I've got to where I am now. That's it's worked for you. I think sometimes if you do that step change approach and just go all out, sometimes it's not sustainable, you know? So
yeah.
Start with these incremental changes. Listen, you know, to Ryan's podcasts. Listen to my podcasts. They're full of information and it's all ways of learning. It's education. And that's why you and I do what we do. I mean, we don't make money off releasing these videos. I don't make a penny off YouTube. I do lots of lives for free. You know, I know you post information for free. I know we do coaching, but I mean, this is, you know, a separate thing. But all of this information is available on both our channels for free. It's there. Go and watch it. Educate yourself. Feel free to try to rip it apart, but you won't be able to rip it apart. The evidence is airtight, and it's airtight because I'm in pursuit of optimal health. I don't care what that is and what it looks like. I want to be optimally healthy. That for me, that pays my bills. That's my brand. That's my business. But it doesn't mean that I'm wedded to it. And this is what a lot of people say to me, is that you only push this because of your brand. Now, if I were to tell people that living this way is unhealthy, but if you cycle it with carbs, i.e. if you live this way for 3 months and then go back on carbs for 3 months and cycle it, it's really, really good for you. That is a much easier sell than what you and I are trying to do in regards to telling people not to eat veg, for example. And, you know, maybe that's a bit extreme, but that is a far easier sell. I could sell way more coaching. I could sell way more product. And my business, I genuinely believe, would double within the next year or two if I were to tell people that. But I can't, because I don't believe it. I've experimented and tried everything. I'm in pursuit of optimal health. This, to me, is where that journey has taken me. You know, I said to a friend of mine recently that if before a race there was a clinical trial and research papers that said spinning around 3 times and touching the floor before you start your race does something to the body that allows you to run faster, I'd be doing it all the time, you know, regardless of how ridiculous it looks. And that's exactly what I am. If it works, I will be doing it. And every research paper that comes out that says living this way is detrimental, I've easily ripped apart. You know, there's one that you know about that I ripped apart with Georgie Dinkoff and Dr. McCullough recently. And I believe Dr. McCullough was the reason that Paul Saladino gravitated into, you know, more of fruit and things. And it was easily ripped apart, shockingly easy. And if you don't believe me, go and watch that video. That's available on YouTube. Incredibly easy to rip apart. But this, as you say, I believe is the way forward. And let's hope we can get others to jump on board, see the benefit, and that ripple effect begins to take effect, isn't it? And with a bit of luck, that person will tell the next person, and before we know it, the world becomes a much healthier and better place to live in.
Exactly. Yeah, it's optimal we're after, like the little tagline behind me, optimize your life. We're after optimal. And as you said, no one got to carnivore from following the crowd. Like, to get to a carnivore diet, you have to question everything. You have to go against everything. So just because we've got here doesn't mean that, like you said, oh, no, they're just brainwashed into carnivore. They'll never think about anything else. Like, we're always looking for the best thing, experimenting. And, you know, as far as we can tell, this seems to be the optimal thing. and seems to work for so many people. So yeah, I think it's getting the message out there and educating people is the goal, like we're trying to do. Listen, Richard, thank you so much for giving us your time. You've given us plenty of time this evening. And before you go though, tell everyone where they can find you, your website for the Kia Pro Shop, and where they can find you on YouTube and any social media to follow your information.
Awesome. Ryan, been an absolute pleasure, my man. Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm on YouTube, Keto-Pro. If you search for that, you should find it. The words Keto Pro will be there. The website is theketopro.com. You can reach me via the website by email. I do coaching, so there's private coaching available also. I'm available on Instagram. It's keto_pro on Instagram. And my personal one on Instagram is Richard_Anthony_Smith. So feel free to follow me on any one of those. I've got a private group on School, which I go live in every Monday at 5 p.m. It's a Zoom call just like this. It's free. So you just join the School group. There's nothing to pay. And it's a means for live Q&A. So if people have any burning questions, they can join the Zoom. They can ask the question or they can type it in and we have a conversation. There's usually 10 to 20 other people on there. It's a fantastic way for free advice. And YouTube, I go live on YouTube every Sunday, as you know, at 7 p.m. That does get very busy, so get your questions in early. But there's lots of means for free advice and free information. And should you wish to delve a little bit deeper, on every one of my YouTube links, there's a link tree which will lead you to a whole host of really good links to the website and to private consultations and so on and so forth. And that's me. Super simple.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, I'll put all the links in the description anyway, so people can easily find it. And the Keto Pro is the best electrolytes. That's what I use as well. Which I used before I'd even spoken to Richard. He didn't bribe me to use
you
them.
You did. That's right. Yeah. You did. That's how we began chatting.
Yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And they are the best ones available in my opinion. So definitely check them out and check Richard out. And thank you everyone for listening. We'll see you again next week and let's get optimal together.